Call this meeting to order. We'll start with Pledge of Allegiance. We'll all be here to join us in the church.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll start with public comment number one. This is if anybody from the public would like to come up and address topics on today's agenda or anything else that you'd like to discuss, please come up to the microphone right over here now. Seeing no one, we'll move on ahead. And next, we're going to do bid opening. So Darren Moon, if you'd like to come up, please. Darren walked out of the room. Okay, she got it. Sorry, Clara, I thought maybe you got it.
The last minute
bids. Got it. Good morning, Tyler. This says our first one will be for the culvert replacement project on Sandhill Trail over an unnamed waterway. Please remember to speak closely into the mic. Thank you.
First bid we have is Midwest Contracting. Second room on your sheet. Bid bond is attached and signed.
$60.90. So that's 120760.90.
Correct. As Peterson Contractors in Rhinebeck. Bid bond is attached and signed. Their bid is $104,025.30. 104025.30. Structures on the locator highway. The bid bond is signed and attached. Their bid is $116,753.95. 116753.95. Bond is signed and attached. Their bid is $156,931.50. 156-931-50. So Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck is the parent low bidder. We'll check the numbers and get back next week.
Thank you. And now we're moving on to the culvert replacement project on 310th Street over an unnamed field drainage. And on 210th Street over Dye Creek.
There are three projects tied on this. So the first bidder we have is Peterson Contractors again. I have their bid bonds signed and attached. And their bid for project L-S 33-73-85.
Is this the one on 210th Street?
Correct.
Yeah.
Their bid for that project is $109,494.20. 109.20. Their bid for project L-IC5-73-85, which is on 287. Is $93,809.30. 93809.30. And their bid for project L-COL-19-73-85 on 310th Street is $85,734.90. 85734.90. And their total for the three projects combined is $289,038.40. 238.40. Next contractor we have is Midwest. They're out of Marshall, Minnesota. Is $125,949.60. 125949.60. 0.60. Their bid for project L-IC5-73-85 is $107,161.70. 107,161.70. The bid for project L-COL-19-73-85 is $93,813.40. 93813.40. Their total for the three projects is $326,924.70. 326924.70. The last bidder we have is Progressive Structures out of Decatur. Bid bonds are signed and attached for all three projects. Their bid for project L-S33-73-85 is $124,860.05. 124,860.05. Their bid for project L-IC5-73-85 is $180,606.75. 108,606.75. The bid for the last project, project L-COL-19-73-85 is $97,992.00. 97,992.00. Their total is $331,458.80. 331,458.80. So we'll check those numbers as well. Peterson is a little better on that one.
Thank you. It's interesting and heartening to note that looks like every one of the apparent winning bids, if that's all the bids, were under the engineer's estimate by at least 10 to 15 to 20%. So thank you. It's time to see Craig Evans and to discuss the Center for Creative Justice. Craig, good morning. You have a report for us.
Yeah, I do. Thank you.
Well, I'm Craig Evans. I'm the Executive Director at the Center for Creative Justice and our annual report. CCJ is a private nonprofit agency providing community-based correctional supervision to adult criminal offenders placed on probation by the local judiciary. We're a bit unique in that aspect, being a private nonprofit. But we've been in Ames since 1974, making this our 45th year serving Story County. More than 99% of CCJ's clients are assigned by the local judiciary in Story County and Ames. We supervise about 75% of the community members placed on probation in Story County. Our active caseload at the time I wrote this was 705. We have 3 full-time and 1 half-time probation officer. I also carry a caseload as well. From January 2018 to January 29th of 2019, we received 636 cases for supervision. Just a general breakdown, 174 were drug-related, 161 were OWIs, 57 were assaulted cases. Many of our clients suffer from substance abuse and mental health and anger management problems. Since January 1st of 2018, we've referred 239 clients for substance abuse assessment, 102 for treatment, 40 for mental health evaluation and treatment, 38 to the Iowa Domestic Abuse Program. We also started our own anger management program to meet a community need, and in 2018 we served about 29 clients with that program. We're also currently partnering with the Story County Attorney's Office and some other local agencies to pilot mental health court. We did accept 2 clients early on, kind of as a pilot, and supervised a couple of cases and actually worked with the mental health court just kind of see how it was going to go. There is a planning committee in place now that's trying to put together a more comprehensive program. Probation supervision is designed to allow offenders to remain in the community where they can receive rehabilitative services while at the same time being held accountable to keep the community safe from repeated criminal conduct. As you're probably aware from our United Way Clear Impact Scorecard, the 2 main outcomes we measure are success and recidivism or non-recidivism. 86% of our clients last year successfully completed their probation. 94% of the clients that successfully completed their probation did not reoffend within the following year. We attempt to use evidence-based practices such as actuarial risk assessment and client staff matching or responsivity in our service provision. We face a number of challenges meeting our budgetary needs. Cases are assigned by the local judiciary, so we have absolutely no control over the number of cases we receive in any given year. Much of our revenue is generated from client fees. So revenue projections are kind of complicated by the fact that we don't, there's fluctuation in client numbers and also the erratic timing of fee payment. Some clients pay early on, some don't pay till the end. We're also seeing a significant increase in clients who suffer from mental health problems. Those cases require significantly increased case management time. I listed a couple of examples. One is a client I personally supervised. During the months of November and December, we invested about 9 hours a month in case management for that single case. One of the cases that was in the pilot of mental health court during that same period, we invested about 7 hours per month to that single client. So as you can guess, with caseloads between 130 and 140, those additional time demands really stretch our staff resources and our budget. We're also seeing a slight increase in higher charge type cases, higher risk clients. Again, those cases require more time for case management. But just kind of summarize, we provide, we believe, a cost-effective and results-oriented community option for working with adult criminal offenders. Reducing criminal conduct has a widespread impact over the entire community. Fewer tax dollars are expended investigating and prosecuting offenders, and victimization is reduced. Our programming has a positive ripple effect in the community that goes beyond the individuals we provide services to. Clients who receive treatment stay sober, become more self-sufficient, and clients learn to manage their anger appropriately, obtain and maintain employment, take responsibility for their actions, manage the finances appropriately, and pay back victims. It impacts the entire community. They become better partners, better parents, coworkers, and community members. They remain self-sufficient and can better meet the family's basic needs. That's kind of us in a nutshell. Ready to keep it short.
Thank you. Supervisors, any comments or questions?
I have just one question, Craig. In terms of your employment rate for your clients, do you have an estimate of a percentage of full-time, part-time, unemployed, disabled, et cetera?
I do not. Yeah, I don't have probably would be an accurate estimate. Our clients do face a number of challenges obtaining employment. One, they have criminal records, some have felony backgrounds, many don't have a stable work history, and a big issue is most of them don't have a valid driver's license. So it is complicated by that. We have a fair number that I would say are either underemployed or unemployed. Of course, the employment rate here in Ames is very, very high, but based on that, we have a much higher, certainly the employment rate amongst our clients isn't 96% or whatever the reverse of the unemployment rate is. I would guess, I hate to get a percentage, but maybe 70 or 80. We have quite a few unemployed, or more, sometimes a bigger issue is underemployment. They're employed, but they're not making enough to really meet their family needs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the Supreme Court just came down with a moratorium on creating any new courts. How does that impact what we're trying to do?
Well, I don't know. I haven't. To be honest, I don't. I haven't looked into that. We haven't had a meeting. We have a meeting scheduled. They're putting together a meeting, I guess, sometime hoping the next month.
So I think the positive impacts that it would have are important. I just want to know how that moratorium that they issued might impact.
Yeah. To be honest, I really don't know yet. I haven't discussed it with Latifa Faisal from the County Attorney's Office and Monique Benkin, a professor at Iowa State University, are kind of heading up now that planning project. So I don't know. I hope it doesn't impact it negatively. I think mental health courts and drug courts as well have proven to be effective with run correctly.
Craig, I don't have any questions for you. Just thank you for this program to be so effective year after year, for you to pick it up and keep it headed in that direction. It is a really successful one where I think your clients benefit too.
Thank you. We do, and we certainly appreciate the support from Story County. Without that, we would have difficulty doing what we do. Any other questions?
None.
Thank you for your time and your support.
Enjoy the drive back.
You got
it.
Putting that
back. Yeah, that's true. All right. Next, take a look at consideration of the minutes from last week.
Yeah, I'll move approval.
Second. Right. No discussion. So Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Let's go to consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Consent agenda. Please remove items 1, 2, and 3. They will appear on next week's agenda instead.
I move approval of the remaining items on the consent agenda.
Second.
Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. We have no public hearing items, so we are ready for NAFTA-DESCO. So discussion and consideration of the liability insurance marketing option. And with us, Steve Goodhue, and I'll let you introduce Andrew.
Thank you so much for inviting us to be on the agenda this morning. I'm Steve Goodhue with NAFTA-DESCO Insurance, and joining me at the table is Andrew Rickless, and in the audience, Susan Hosher, and I'll invite them to add comments as they see fit. So thank you again for placing us on the agenda. I think this is a good time. We always welcome the opportunity to talk about insurance, but as I explained a little bit, I think this is a good suggestion that we sit back and take a look at the market. And Supervisor Olson, you recommended we do this, and as I'll show you in a minute, I think it's a good time to step back and really see where Story County fits as it relates to the industry and risk and what opportunities might be to sharpen up premium and coverages. So what we're going to do over the next about 12 to 14 minutes is we're going to take just a quick look at the current insurance structure. We're going to look at some claims analysis. We're going to give you some sense from a premium perspective where Story County might stack up to other public sector, private sector type organizations. We're going to talk about some market opportunities. We're going to refresh a deductible analysis that we did at the annual review time, and I don't believe Supervisor Merkin has seen that, so we're going to spend a little time on that today, and then we're going to review some recommendations and certainly take some questions from there. So, first slide, just a refresher and a reminder of how the county is insured today. Property and liability is with ICAP. That stands for Iowa Communities Insurance Pool. That pool insures 75% of Iowa counties today. They insure some cities and other governmental units as well, but 75% of the counties are insured with them. We've been with ICAP, the county's been with ICAP for 17 years, and that's why I think it is a good time to just take a step back and see what else might be available in the marketplace. One of the unique features of ICAP is they do provide a voucher. It's based on your longevity in the program, and this past year it was $32,554. That reduces your premium, not something you would normally find in the standard market or with standard carriers. And then just as a point of reference, the remaining 25% of the Iowa counties are either with another pool called the Heartland Insurance Pool. That's comprised of 9 eastern Iowa counties east of here, a much smaller pool, of course, than ICAP. But something we can certainly talk about later, and the remainder are with EMC Insurance based out of Des Moines. Workers' compensation, the county's workers' compensation insurance is with the INWCA, stands for Iowa Municipal Workers' Compensation Association. That's also a risk-sharing pool related to the Iowa League of Cities. They insure 81 counties in Iowa. They've actually had some growth. Last time we looked at their numbers, they had about 70 or 71 counties, and so they've been growing in the state. County has also been with INWCA for 17 years. The remaining counties, 9, are also with the Heartland Insurance Pool. That's a work comp property liability pool, again, comprised of the same 9 counties east of here. 6 counties are with either EMC or other carriers, and then 3 counties are self-insured. And by self-insured, we mean those counties are likely covering the first $500,000 to $1 million of a work comp claim. These are much larger counties, larger budgets, they have the ability probably to do that, and we can certainly talk about that. But that's how Story County is insured today. We're going to spend a lot of time on this, but we had a meeting recently with Supervisor Merkin, and she asked about deductibles, and I might just point out a couple, 3 line items here, and then we're going to come back to this a little bit later. Buildings or property, you'll see about $51 million of insured value there, and there's a $10,000 deductible on all of your building properties. General liability, very similar. There's $15 million of coverage there, $10,000 deductible. And then law enforcement liability, $15 million of coverage there, also $10,000 deductible. And your work comp has a 0 deductible today. And we'll talk about that as we go a little bit later, just refresh your memory on some deductible analysis that we did. But wanted to show you what the current deductibles are in the structure. That would give you some sense of what the county's risk profile might be and how maybe another carrier might look at the county from a risk perspective, whether or not it's a risk that other carriers might have interest in. And these are numbers I think you've seen before, but I would show them again today. The top blue line are your workers' compensation claims, looking back over the past 5 years. This is total number of claims, so this is frequency. And you'll see 25, 20, low point of 18 in the 2016-17 year. The number in the parentheses there is a number that actually Todd asked us to take a look at and bring to the safety committee meeting recently. And that's a ranking as it relates to 8 other counties of similar size. There are a lot of counties in that those 71 counties that are much, much smaller, smaller payroll, smaller number of employees. But you're kind of in the middle there, if you will. The median, if you will, on other counties as it relates to total number of work comp claims. All other claims are property and general liability claims, and you'll see it ranges from 7 to 14 over the past 5 years. That's not a significant number of claims on either count. You've got a lot of employees. You expect to have probably 20 work comp claims plus or minus, and certainly a handful of property and liability claims. Next slide. This shows you the incurred losses. So again, the blue is work comp. Those are dollars paid out for work comp claims over the past 5 years. And then all other are property and general liability claims that have been paid out, auto as well. and you'll see again, not significant numbers, a little bit of claim activity in the 14-15 year, about $150,000 of work comp claims paid out. The 13-14, 15-16, 16-17 years, again, are not significant. A lot of those are medical only. That doesn't hurt your experience mod, which we'll look at in a minute. Really doesn't hurt the county's sort of situations as it relates to premiums. We have, ICAP has paid out a few claims the past couple years on property and liability, and in 16-17, there was a public official claim that was paid out. I think you're aware that was about $200,000. And then the large claim in 17-18 is the Justice Center roof. I think about $217,000 has been paid out, and there's actually $288,000 in reserve. I think the estimate was it was going to be about $403,000, but there's a little more in reserve. Susan and I were just looking at that yesterday, and that reserve may get adjusted downward. But right now it's showing about $500,000, and there were a couple of miscellaneous other claims over the past year. So some claim activity from a property and liability perspective. Another carrier may look at that and say, okay, there's been some activity. Maybe it's not as much of an appetite for them. But again, overall, you have not had a lot of claims over the past 5 to 10 or even 17 years for that matter. Next slide. You've seen this slide before, but we always like to show it. This is your experience modification rate. This is a function of your, really, your incident and safety record as a county. It's always been terrific. It's you'll see it ranges from 0.59 to 0.78, and the number in parentheses is the ranking of all counties across the state of Iowa. So if you go back to the 15-16 year, 16-17 year, Story County was the number one county in the state for having the lowest experience mod. We've had a little bit of an increase in the mod. Some of that was a function of our payroll. Rolled off for community life. When that rolled off, that payroll has an impact on your experience mod and how it's calculated, but that also helps us in some respects too. So your mod's always been terrific. I know I've said this before. It's a tribute to the Board of Supervisors, tribute to the employees and staff and certainly the safety committee. You have a very, very good mod. And so from a risk perspective there, most carriers will look at that and have a lot of interest in insurance story accounting experience models. So next slide, we're going to shift to really how does the county look in terms of rate structure on work comp, property liability, and I'm going to let Andrew speak to that.
Sure, again, as Steve mentioned, we're going to jump into the premiums now. So the first slide here is for work comp only. And what I've done here is I split it between kind of IMWCA, which is your current program today, and then what the best option in the market out there. The top two lines there are lines that are fixed. As you guys all know, work comp is a function of payroll and state rates. Okay, state rates are set by payroll, and there's a calculation, and there's your manual state rate premium, whether it be for the open market or whether it be through IMWCA. And the same goes for your experience mod. 0.74 will be fixed, no matter what carrier you take that to. And then what changes from there is what the markets have access to for credits. Since IMWCA is a pool and it's set up differently than your standard markets, they have access to much more credits available. The standard market, the maximum credits available would be about 39%. You can see in IMWCA, be about 62%. There's more behind these credits. I try to make it as simple as possible, but this just kind of gives you a quick snapshot. Really, you're paying today $157,000 in work comp premium. The best you can get in the market is about $220,000. Outside of IMWCA. Now, this is for a guaranteed cost plan. And what guaranteed cost plan means, zero deductible, dollar one paid. Now, you could also, you know, high deductible plans, or you could do, as Steve mentioned before, as you can self-insure up to $500,000. There's other available options out there. But again, dollar one, guaranteed cost, there's nothing out there that's better from a guaranteed cost standpoint. Again, now some of the market open market may have what's called dividends. We have below a certain loss ratio, we get a percentage of the premium back, but that's never guaranteed. And again, even if we had a dividend plan, I don't see how it would offset. And again, with the claims you've had in the last few years, you wouldn't get a dividend back anyways. So, any questions on the work comp premium breakdown? The next, I kind of went down and compared auto, property, and liability. kind of do this in three separate sections here. First off, on the auto side, you have 172 units, rateable units. Of those, 144 are what's called power units. So trailers, I took out of there because trailers, there's no cost for those. You're currently paying $18,385. And I'm going to make a quick note here. On all these premiums, I note this voucher is not taking out here. So the voucher is completely separate. This voucher is not guaranteed.
Thank you.
So this is just what you're paying in premiums. You're paying $18,000. So what does that figure out for average power unit? It's $128. And that includes heavy trucks, light trucks, police vehicles, every vehicle you have out there, you're paying $128. Again, this is zero deductible on the auto piece. So how does that compare? I grabbed a couple of our larger private accounts and larger public accounts, and what they're paying per unit for just liability, and your rates are much, much lower. And again, as you can guess, you can look at your own personal insurance. $128 for a vehicle on the road is pretty expensive. I got three teenage drivers, and I'm paying a lot more than that for their auto insurance. So, we didn't take this to market, but we insured enough accounts. $128 is a very good price from an auto standpoint. Property. Your total property line is about $64 million in blanket coverage. Annual premium is about $115,000. It comes out to about 18 cent rate per $100 of value. How does that compare? It compares okay. The market, I think there might be better pricing in the market. I don't think it'd be a ton better, but I do think the market may bring some better property rates out there. So this includes your business income, this includes your equipment breakdown, this includes your computer coverage. Everything's lumped into there. But again, I do think there may be some better pricing out there. Not a ton, but it might be out there. Last but not least, with liability. Again, we went through all the coverages you have and the limits that are available. You're paying about $153,000 today in premium. As we noted earlier, there's not a lot of markets out there for counties, EMC, Heartland. So we made some phone calls and just said, okay, where would you come in? Here are some exposures. What's your thoughts? And really, it was all within 2 to 4% of what you're paying. Again, these aren't, you don't have fixed that. We just kind of ballpark it, and they just said, yeah, we're not going to come in a ton better. We're not going to come in a ton better. It'll be right within line. Any questions on that slide? Again, back to opportunities. So work comp, there's pretty much three options. IMWCA, which you were today, we talked about. EMC, which would be considered, an open market. And then your Heartland Insurance Pool. Heartland is a much, much smaller pool. The counties that make up Heartland are much smaller than Story County. We have a list, if you like, a list of those counties, but I can tell you they're not anywhere the size of Story County. Property liability, again, ICAP is an option, EMC insurance, again, Heartland Insurance Pool, and then we just throw out national carriers, because we know national carriers would love to insure the county. With that said, there's no counties in Iowa that they're currently insuring. So while they may look good from a pricing standpoint, we don't know that. I can tell you there's not going to be a lot of expertise or a lot of claims expertise for somewhere to have. So here's Steve mentioned earlier, too, about the deductibles. So I broke this down. We've got property, liability, auto, of what your current coverage limits are, and then you currently have a $10,000 deductible, except for auto liability and except for excess liability. Those are zero deductibles. You can see what you're paying in annual premiums for these. We then quoted, okay, what would the cost savings be if we increase that deductible from $10,000 to $25,000 or from $10,000 to $50,000? You can see what the annual premiums do. Obviously, in the property, there's a pretty significant decrease in premium. $115,000 down to $104,000 for a $25,000 deductible, and then down to $89,000 with a $50,000 deductible. For the liability lines, the deductible, there's not a ton of cost savings. To jump to different deductibles. And again, this is all through ICAP. This is all based off of your 18 and 19 premiums. We can do the same thing again this year for the upcoming term. So then you're thinking, okay, if we were to go to a large deductible, what would be our out-of-pocket cost based off of our past 5 years of experience? I hope you think 5 years, but I didn't go back any farther than that. If you went to the $25,000 deductible, your out-of-pocket costs for property over that five-year period would be about $28,000. And for liability, it would have been about $19,000. An additional out-of-pocket cost just because of the larger deductible. And then the $50,000 deductible, you'll see about $53,000 additional in out-of-pocket costs and about $44,000 in liability costs. So, again, there's a lot of this slide, a lot going on, but again, try to break it down by premium and then, again, what would be the out-of-pocket additional costs for the county?
So, if I could, we talked about this a year or 2 years ago, and at that point, so I remember us having a big conversation about that, and at that point, I can't remember why on property we didn't decide to, but what was our rationale? Do you guys remember?
Actually, it was more recent than that. I think it was about 6 months ago that we came, and it might have been at the annual renewal, and I think it was set to come back on the agenda, maybe just for one reason it didn't come back on, but I don't know. Listen, I talked a little bit about it the other day, but if you look at it, if you look at the $25,000 deductible, you pay for that claim in 2 years.
Right.
And the same goes on the $50,000, you pay for it in about 2.5 years.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm looking at $50,000. You save $25,000 a year, and it's costing you, it looks like on average, $10,000 a year to get that $25,000.
Correct.
Yep. Yes.
I'm going to make that recommendation here in a minute because I do think it's something.
I just couldn't remember.
I think it just maybe didn't come back on the agenda for one reason or another. Maybe there were other issues you were dealing with. But as Andrew's point, if you look at the general liability and the law enforcement liability, there's not a lot of premium savings there. And it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to pursue that. Property deductible, I think it is something you should do. So we go to the last page, and then maybe this will answer or respond to your comment. So here's our recommendations, and certainly we can leave you with these recommendations today. We can talk about it based on how much time you have on your agenda today. But as Andrew mentioned, the IMWCA pricing is just almost unheard of when it comes to comparing to other standard markets. And as we've talked, and as Andrew mentioned, we've talked to other carriers, it just is really terrific pricing. And so our recommendation is that you would retain the workers' compensation insurance at IMWCA. It's 20 to 30% more competitive on an annual basis. You can go back 5 years, 10 years. It's always been very, very good. I think their claim service is good as well. I think Alyssa can speak to that. And then I think most of you have had the opportunity to meet Dean Shady. He's very good. He and their loss control department are, I think, as good as any organization we deal with. And so, and I think Todd can maybe speak to that as well. But I think there's a good structure there. There's a good relationship. Premiums are very, very good. So our recommendation would be stay with IMWCA on the workers' compensation. The property liability, I think we could market that. I think ICAP is a good place. And we might save a little bit of premium on the liability side. The structure may be a little bit... Story County is a fairly large county. It may be a little big for EMC. We talked a little bit to the underwriter, and they do insure some counties. Story County would be one that are larger counties, as it would be if you put it in the Heartland Insurance Pool. By all means, we think we should have some discussion with them and see what their appetite, see if they have interest in that. And I think it's worth doing. We haven't looked at it in 17 years. I think where we could maybe have some leverage here is encourage, based on what EMC tells us, a little bit better property pricing from ICAP. And that's really the third recommendation. I think there's probably the potential for maybe $10,000, $15,000 worth of savings on the property, the liability, the auto. I'm not sure we're going to see much more savings from ICAP. And then back to Supervisor Sanders, your comment. I think we recommend increasing the property deductible either to 25 or 50. You could stair step it. You could do 25 the first year, and then we could always talk about it again. Next year, there's obviously premium savings. But I think those are the two or three things we'd suggest we do. Let's go talk to EMC a little bit about their interest in Story County. Let's increase the property deductible, and let's try to leverage or encourage a little better price.
After it kind of was being talked about internally, that I asked when was the last time we took a look and put it out for bid, which was my original question. Got the information back that, you know, we've been happy for a long time, but let's go ahead and take a look at the market. I was contacted by both our sheriff and our county attorney, asked to come over and talk. So I invited Todd Ludwell into that meeting also as our risk manager. And they made a very strong case for staying with ICAP for liability. So to let the other two of you know that, they felt that between Matt Tedesco and then the seamlessness they felt headed into ICAP, that if there was a small increase, they felt it was well worth it, given how often they are dealing with something related to the liability side. So just to let the board know.
Appreciate that. We do interface a lot with the sheriff's office and quite a bit with the Story County Attorney's Office, and certainly roads and others.
Yeah, sorry. Didn't you believe that was?
You said one last thing about doing this market comparison. I think, again, it's good that we're doing this. We're happy to do it. It's our job. ICAP, if by chance you were to exit ICAP, there's a 60-day notification period. I think, Supervisor Olson, you know this from another board you serve on. You have to give them 60 days notice. We could reserve our right to exit by then. I think, Susan, when could we have the renewal back from ICAP? May 15th is typically, that's even a little bit early, but we think we could have it back by May 15th. So we might want to reserve our right to leave ICAP. But then one other thing, I want to mention, if you leave ICAP, your claims follow you. So if you've got open claims, typically ICAP will request that you post a letter of credit, a bond, whatever the case may be. If you've got some large open claims, you take those claims with you. And there can be a little risk in doing that. We're working through that with another municipality right now. It can be a little bit interesting to work through that. But you would have to post some sort of letter of credit or bond, your escrow account instead of an escrow account, some services. Those open claims. So there's a little bit of work through that with ICAP. But we could, by all means, we could reserve the right to leave ICAP and then we would stay.
Okay, thank you.
We'd be happy to take questions. Supervisor Olson, I'm sure if you want to talk through this today, if you want to come back, have us come back at a later time for some discussion, but you can direct us however you like. And we'll go to
I had just asked for an update on this. So if either board members have any comments or questions about interest in pursuing further to determine whether we would want to look at a change or whether we're comfortable right here.
So it does say discussion consideration.
Yes, it does.
So I would ask that we stay with IMWCA. I mean, I think clearly we're in as good a shape as we can there with our workers' comp. I like the idea of increasing our deductible to $50,000. As I recall, that's what we decided on last time we talked about it, and just for whatever reason, it never got done. But I'd like to see us go to $50,000 and use that as an opportunity to notify ICAP that we're going to $50,000 and ask for their best pricing, but also market it at that point to EMC and whoever else, just to see.
Yeah.
And my hope would be that we're going to get as favorable pricing, because it looks to me like there's a little room there with ICAP, or should be a little room there with ICAP, and this may be an opportunity to do it. So that's what I'd like to see us do out of today's meeting.
Thanks. Supervisor Murray.
No problems with that.
I have no problems either.
Comment on the deductible. From a property deductible standpoint, again, that deductible is per occurrence. So meaning, again, worst case scenario, large tornado comes through and wipes out numerous buildings. That's one occurrence. So again, it's not a per building deductible. It's an occurrence deductible. So that's why we talked about that. Or meaning, again, our worst case scenario would probably, if we're to hit multiple buildings, you're only out 50.
And how would a standard carrier look at that, Andrew, do you think?
I think I could get a standard carrier due to occurrence deductible as well. Back to the liability, on the liability side, it's an occurrence deductible, where occurrence is defined differently on liability. Occurrence is, there's gray area on the occurrence section there, meaning it can be defined by the carrier then. You know, well, was it one occurrence or multiple occurrences? You know, one claim affecting multiple people. Where property is pretty defined. Okay, large hail, large tornado, that's an occurrence.
And as I recall, when we talked about this before, we stayed as far away from increasing our liability deductible as we could while we were interested in the property deductible. So, what I think I would ask is that they work with Alyssa to get this back on our agenda to formally, if we need to formally request going to 50, just because it looks to me like we just missed getting it in front of us last time.
I think it was not a discussion and consideration item when we came, and so perhaps it needed to come back on the agenda now. The timing is such that to do a midterm, we're probably best just to make that request and do it as part of the renewal. So we'll be back in a couple months and do it then, unless you want to do it sooner.
We do have the options. We could even put it on an upcoming consent agenda. But if at this point I'm looking out, I like the suggestion that work with Alyssa and Todd to determine when's the optimum time for us to go through that. And then I guess the direction, there's no real consideration as a formal vote, but please let ICAP know about the changes we're interested in, and it never hurts to find out what else is out there. And yes, I guess let ICAP know, maybe they can give us a little better price.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been to market. I think this is a very good suggestion, and we'll encourage ICAP to do their best on it.
Thank you. Staff, any further comments or thoughts?
They've covered everything.
All right. Thank you so much
for coming
back.
Thank you for the recommendation and suggestion that we come forward today. We're happy to, always happy to talk about insurance. Thank you.
Stay warm within your house and everything, and drive safely. The next item up is discussion and consideration of master tax exempt lease/purchase agreement with U.S. Bancorp Government Leasing and Finance for 10 secondary road mortgage graders. Aaron, what is that with us?
Okay, as a reminder, you've already approved the actual mortgage grader lease with Ziegler CAT. This is just the financing side with U.S. Bank. There was a little bit of a delay in the paperwork because the interest rate is strictly based on when they get delivered. CAT could not commit to the last four mortgage graders. They have six in stock and four were still being shipped. So we've got them a little tighter on their date of when it can be delivered. So that's been pushed back a couple weeks to April 2nd be the due date for the first payment. That's probably a good thing the way the winter's going. We're probably going to be using our mortgage graders through March and plowing snow. That's probably not going to hurt us too much, and Ziegler's fine with this arrangement. So, with that, and the interest rate did not change by pushing it back in a couple of weeks. So, it stays at 3.9%. So, we are prepared now to get the financing side approved by the board.
Take a motion?
Yeah, move approval of the motor grader lease as presented with U.S. Bank.
Discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Wolfson? Aye. Thank you very much, Aaron. Moving on to the next item, which is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1976, Agreement for Grading and Paving of 560th Avenue. That's E63 South, and it's about, looks like almost 1 mile, 0.91 miles, within the city of Huxley, Iowa.
Some recent developments will probably just be a discussion later today. I don't expect to take action on this. I'll tell you why. Just first of all, make sure you're familiar with where the project is. Huxley, the road starts right here. This is a paved E60, or we call it E63. And then it starts there and comes all the way down to Highway 210. But there is a stretch that Huxley has already paved down here when they did this annexation in the past, so it's paved up to here. So this project is just to pave this stretch. It does have a bend in the road right here and a deep ravine, and we plan on straightening that, so that part is hard to get an estimate of what that's actually going to cost and the fill amount until it gets further along in the design. The way this current agreement is set up, and when talking with Ethan, he reviewed this, and the only concern he had, and I kind of had the same one, was what out does the board have as far as how much it will put in the project financially. It's currently set up where the award of contract has to come through the county and be approved before the city can move forward and recommend for it. But that doesn't give the city any assurance that we're going to participate to a certain dollar amount. Right now we have budgeted $750,000 to apply towards this project. So my estimate was about $1.5 million. I talked to a city council member yesterday at Huxley, and he says they have started discussions with a consultant for design, and their estimate's up to about $2.5 million. So part of this discussion can, you know, carry over into our meeting this afternoon with the five-year program discussion. Whether the board wants to commit to a certain dollar amount not to exceed, or if you're all in on just going 50-50 whole projects, that's something you need to think about, and we can delay this a while until after the five-year program discussion, but I wanted to get you thinking about it at least.
Okay, that sounds like a sound recommendation. Let us talk this afternoon.
And I do have another project I want to bring up now, just because it's somewhat tied to this, and it's probably going to come up this afternoon. Mark Jackson with the city, Story City, has a similar project to this, where they're going to annex out, and there's about a 40-50 lot subdivision, and it requires some paving. He was going to be here this afternoon, he said, to discuss it and present it to the board, asking for some funding to pave the road, and it's similar to this, and that it's kind of shared ground, half annexed, half not. So just kind of think through that before this afternoon. I'm going to be completely off guard this afternoon on how much should the county be putting money towards the development that's going to get annexed.
It sounds like it's not on the agenda, and so Supervisor Sanders reminded me earlier today about we just stay very close on that agenda. So, but we can discuss it during the work session this afternoon about kind of the philosophy of that. Thank you.
Let me show you this real quick on the screen to see a better idea what I'm talking about in the Story City. I forgot I had this on my slide. This is the Interstate I-35, Huxley, and this is E-15. So getting off here, this is Timberland Drive.
In Story City.
Yeah, Story City. These are the two parcels right here that they're talking about developing. So Story City would annex that. They may possibly annex some of this on the west side of the road as well. The pavement currently stops right here. So we'd have to pave further out, and our consultant, I think, had a $450,000 estimate for that paving.
What's that zone?
I do not know what it's zoned for county, but the city's
proposing
to annex it.
Proposing to annex it before any development is done.
Correct.
And once again, we need to be careful here. Appreciate the information and the visual.
So that's going to come up this afternoon for more discussion.
All right, great. Thank you for that news. Any further discussion on this item, board, related to Huxley, 560th proposal? There's no motion on that, so we'll move on. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 1977, Story County Board of Supervisors joining with the boards of other counties to support an application for state grant funds to be used to create a database of actionable water quality improvement projects in drainage districts in the county, consistent with the edge of field practices of the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. This was brought to us when we were over in Boone, and that was a joint drainage district meeting between joint Boone and Story County. Kent Rohde, the engineer on several projects, and another person from his firm with Bolton Mink had asked if Story County would consider participating in this multi-county proposal. There is no one to present on this today, so I would open up with the board to find out if the board has read through the proposal that was presented or has any questions. Maybe we could discuss among ourselves as far as what it was put in front of us.
Yeah, so I like the concept. I'm concerned about us moving ahead
without fully understanding what the long-term ramifications might be.
Right.
And so the question I would ask is, has Ethan, as legal counsel, had a chance to review this?
No, and thank you for that. And Supervisor Merkin reminded me just this morning, I had briefly mentioned it to Ethan, so I called him at 9:30 this morning. And he said that he we could go ahead, if we were so interested, we could approve joining into this, which is at this point an application, not the actual agreeing to do anything with it, just we're supporting the application. And then we could make a motion that indicates subject council approval, and he would get back to us in a day or so on whether he saw any caveats with it. The turnaround time on this is very tight. It was not presented to us until we were at the meeting in Boone, and this is our only meeting other than a special meeting to deal with it, and they would like to turn in the application on the 15th. February 15th.
Proposals are due Friday.
Yeah, due Friday. Right. So this is what we have. Supervisor Merkin and I did have some questions. Supervisor Sanders, you had to leave that meeting early, so you didn't get an opportunity to ask questions on it. As I read through not only the paper, explanatory paper, but as I read through the sample letter we were provided with and the resolution, it is clear that we are committing to more than it had originally been presented to us when we were at the drainage district, the joint drainage district meeting. There is, as you go through this, we pledge to do some public promotion of it. We pledge some staff time to help identify suitable sites. We also pledge that a supervisor would serve on the leadership committee. One of the questions I had just written here was that, what is the difference between a leadership committee and a governing board? Whether you have actual control over it, or does it rest, does control rest with the nonprofit? So those are questions I had. Supervisor Merkin?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to some of those.
Sure. Yes.
I don't see a leadership committee defined. My guess would be that we're not forming anything here that is an official entity. It's more of an advisory committee. That's just my guess from reading the RFPs in the past. I did talk with some of our staff who are working on the looking at our countywide watershed assessment, and was told that we have some tools and some information that might, in fact, if this proposal were approved and granted, that we have some tools that would be very helpful to the group in identifying some proposed sites or some good sites for wetlands in association with drainage tiles and drainage districts. I personally am very interested in this. I think that it gives a lot of, it can move things forward in terms of where we go with drainage in this state of Iowa. I would be willing, if you're looking for this kind of thing, I would be willing to serve on the leadership team if this were to move forward, because I think it fits very well with my other board and commission responsibilities. So I think we should have legal look at it. So we should, if we approve it, make that contingent upon approval by legal, and they need to get to that pretty quickly. But I'm very much in favor of us doing it, and I'm going to move, let me find some language, unless there's more discussion before we make a motion.
Well, you make the motion second, we can always talk more afterwards.
Okay, yeah, I think that motion. I would move approval of Resolution 19-77.
Yeah, and I'll second, and I'll say that I can be supportive of all of that as long as we are really, really clear that this resolution and our letter of support, which in my mind would be drafted by our chair, reviewed by legal counsel, and then submitted in a timely fashion, does not commit Story County resources, monetary or manpower, specifically, right? We make some general statements about these are the kinds of things we might be willing to do, but I don't take that as committing us to anything specifically. As long as that's where we are, then I'm good. I just want to make sure it's clear.
If I can read something. This is from the IDOLS document. No local funding is required, only the active participation of the counties and support of the project goals.
Absolutely, but that's not exactly what it says in the resolution or the letter of support. And so I just want to make sure that we're clear that our support of this, of looking at this opportunity, does not commit us to anything in the future. I know that's what's being said, mm-hmm. but a lot of times, Linda, that's what's said early on, and then it tends to, well, you supported this, so of course you're going to commit staff resources.
Right. And the way I read the resolution in the next to the last bullet point, which would be on the second page, if you're scrolling through, right, is that... that if the proposal accepted and funded, the board will join with the other ones to establish a leadership committee, which you've addressed, to advise and assist the project team, to educate and inform landowners and participating counties. And that does not lock us into money. It does possibly lock us into some staff time, depending on how we educate, and to actively support the project team in participating in meetings with landowners in drainage districts. And that could be your time, if we're taking it forward or not. But so that's the closest I read in there that committed us to, but it does look at there will be some energy investment and or staff time. So then that was a little, the last bullet point. I would make an edit if you would be open to an amendment to the motion that says under the proposal will, that's the second line of that last bullet point, and then it goes on, if constructed, improve water quality locally, and it says what it will do. And I'd like to just change it to say under the proposal are expected. That takes us away from making a statement that any of this will reduce nutrients. Strategy, but instead that we're saying are expected. So I am wordsmithing here again to take out that. But that was the only thing that I came about in the resolution that I felt would I'd like to change, which is more of a statement.
I would amend my motion to substitute in the last bullet, the second line, for the word will, to substitute are expected to.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Jim, Matt, Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Wilson? Aye. All right. So back now to the commitment. I got more of a feel from reading the sample letter that that there was a longer commitment there. And I would be happy to work with the county attorney to make it clear that we are not committing any staff or any money, any resources at this time. And I believe that addresses what you were talking about.
Yeah, and what I'd even be softer than that for the resource, I would say underscore that we're not directly committing to any of that, but it doesn't mean that we won't be supportive when a specific project comes forward. It just means that we reserve the right to consider every one of those on their merits rather than just making a blanket, yeah, we're all in.
You know, my feeling really is it doesn't say we're going to do something. We're not committing ourselves to do it. I don't think we have to say, but we're not going to do this or that.
Okay. So you'd like me to be more diplomatic, and Ethan is very good at that, so I will work with Ethan on that to create a letter that shows that we are supporting the concept. We are in to help create these databases. We will address resources as needed in the county as it comes available, or something more along that line. Does that work for you guys?
Sure. And I don't think Linda's wrong. I mean, so I stand strong that the Board of Supervisors, until we formally decide we're going to do something, we aren't committed to doing it. I just get uncomfortable when it comes to these kind of letters of support that have a little vagueness in them. Of making sure that we're all clear, and it's more about the three of us being clear than anything else, whether we express that outwardly or not. I just want the three of us to be clear that my support of this anyway does not give away any of our future authority.
Okay.
Authority to
specifically decide on any of these things, right? So sometimes, Linda, when it appears that you are supportive of something, that is taken to mean that you are wholly supportive regardless of what the request is. And it is gray area, and I just want to make sure that I was underscoring my position on this.
What I would like to do then is get started on this letter. It's going to be after reading the roads. I'll try before, but after the roads in this afternoon. Get it to our attorney tomorrow morning. Get a draft out, and you're both welcome to see it if you'd like. That's the wording on it. But then we will send it out, and I will emphasize to Ethan, maybe even to listen to this last few minutes of the discussion to know what the message we're trying to convey, so he helps me convey it.
Sure. I view this as a, assuming this motion passes, I view this as a board chair option to write.
Right. Okay.
I would say I really like the final sentence of the letter. I've asked for more.
To in the future fairly consider the incorporation of water quality improvement projects into drainage districts of the county. I highlighted that, Linda, as one that I thought said there's a commitment, but it very clearly qualifies as the landowners in the district may desire and as allowed under the laws of the state, which we know are outdated at best. So, but I did like that. So I note that we will end with that also. Let us know what we do up above. Okay? Then I'm going to call for the motion, the main motion. Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Get to work on that. Thank you. That takes care of all of our regular business. There are no departmental reports or other reports. So we're at public forum number two. Would any members of the public, Paula, care to come up and comment? Thank you for being here. And now, liaison assignments, committee meetings, updates, etc., announcements. Supervisor Sanders.
Pass.
Okay, Supervisor Merkin.
Did meet with some staff regarding the issue of the coordination of our watershed assessment report, how we're going to move forward on that. And two of the staff are here. I believe that, was it next week he wanted to come back the board with recommendations to be considered? Can I see a head nodding?
My plan next week.
What's that?
The watershed assessment. Yeah, I think it was 19.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let you know that it's going to be a long meeting, but I already had it as a request, a possible request from Supervisor Merkin, and with Supervisor Sanders being gone the next 2 weeks. I believe that if there was some direction to give, we wanted to try and give it, especially as we're in the budget situation. So that's fine. I'll go ahead and put you on for the 19th. Still seem like that conversation is late. Anything else?
Enjoy the drainage district meeting a lot over in Boone. I was really, and we talked about that proposal, but I'm really excited about that. There's some things we can do with drainage districts that are more than just the same old, and get the same results. So that was good. There's a lot of other meetings. The assessor's mini board was interesting. And that's coming up, the full board.
Well, that's right.
On this Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
There are too many meetings. I can't remember them all.
Okay.
But we're in a lot.
Okay, good. I'll try to quickly run through some items. I already have discussed during the budget workshop, but to recap, that I had talked to the city clerk at Colo about the possibility of us needing to look at maybe moving forward independently due to their schedule when it comes to looking at the Hickory Grove sewer situation. Mike Cox is here, and Mike and I have talked. He's going to make a phone call to Central Iowa Water. I'm going to call the mayor to get some more information and kind of a second viewpoint on where Colo is standing. The Farm Bureau, the local Surrey County Farm Bureau board met last Thursday. Darren Moon was there, as was Auditor Lucy Martin, and two representatives from the Sheriff's Department. There were a variety of topics, always top on the list, if they want to know what bridges are going to get repaired. So Darren brought his maps. Thank you for that. Got into a discussion on human trafficking based upon someone who was there, having been here when we did our presentation with George Valitzos. Did briefly discuss the budget, but I just informed them we thought maybe we would be having to raise levy rates, but we had no idea how much, and we weren't through the process, so that was a very short conversation. And then they did express some interest about knowing when the Master Matrix special meeting was going to be rescheduled, because they wanted to send a lot of people. It sounds like that there will be a lot of people in attendance, and some of you know, it is set for Tuesday evening, the 19th. So that's next Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. We've moved up the time a bit at Gates Hall.
So we can all plan on a blizzard event next Tuesday.
I saw that on your calendar. That's actually Loris's event, blizzard. No, third time's a charm. Thank you once again to all of the staff and the auditor's office and the Nevada Police Department. You know, everyone has had to reschedule now 3 times. So, and if it is a blizzard, I'm just headed south. Okay? There were a couple other meetings I attended. The Story County Housing Trust Fund had an informational session. They're looking for more board members, and they did pick up a board of likely one, Greg Schluter from Collins. Because as they move forward, one of the suggestions from the state organization that regulates the housing trust funds is they need more board members on it. And then I discussed, I met with Brenda Dreyer, the VP, and discussed what would be happening moving forward with the trust, even though it's a year out before they need to search for a new administration option. Brenda's a rapid planner and wants to start talking about options now as it moves forward. But it is not an immediate need, but what are we going to do? And then general discussion around the county. The Story County Opioid Task Force met yesterday. They are going to stay as a group. Sometimes task force disband after they do their tasks. They're going to set new tasks because they still feel there's a lot of community outreach to do. I did not get to Slater last night due to the storm to just inform them about the discussion we had over in Boone at the Boone 140 Story 7 Joint Drainage District meeting. I will make contact with the mayor then later this week, since I was told by one of their clerks is don't come. The weather is terrible down here. I was at the VA Commission. They invited me, and I attended yesterday. They're hoping to have Kate Gregory appointed by us on the 19th. I believe Deb Schilder will also take care of putting that on the agenda when she gets back. They've already talked about this, but they feel that they want an appointment, and I believe Deb has talked to Ethan. We already appointed as of a date. I understand that.
Well, no, I'm concerned that Deb's not back in time to get it on the agenda, so somebody else might need to take
care. Okay. Alyssa, could you work with me on it, maybe?
Yeah, I have that legal opinion.
So. Oh, super. Oh, there we go. Deb covered it, as always. Excellent. And so Deb sworn in, and they're hoping for that she will then take her position as of March 1st. Of course, we had the budget work session. Once again, thank you to everybody who worked over the weekend to crunch numbers and everyone who has put in an effort on this. Tomorrow we have Township Trustees. Thursday there's Slater Historical Meeting. I'll also be attending the CIRIDE Board. They're looking at a new facility site, and that may be related to something with HRDA. And also have a couple of meetings on Friday. And I finally have run. Oh, yes. The other big item on February 19th for everyone to realize on the agenda is it will be the discussion for the Healthy Life Center. So once again, time for that meeting on the morning will be a long session. We'll try to move along as quickly as possible. We have the staff meeting in the afternoon, and then at 6 o'clock we have the master matrix meeting. And with that, I'm out of breath and out of time. So if there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
We are adjourned.